Baseball is an old sport, full of legendary quotations that may or may not even be real. Never allow the fear of striking out keep you from playing the game. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. You got a camera? Take a picture. You just f***ed Pat Burrell. Is your jealous? Because Pat Burrell is f***ing your Strap in, folks. Today, we're discussing the man, the myth, the machine, Pat Burrell, on Continued Success. Welcome to another week of Continued Success, the Phillies podcast where we talk about whatever we want, and then we talk about what was going on with the 2009 Phillies around this time. Today we've got a real, real disgusting episode to talk about, but first, before we get to that, I am Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. What's up, Liz?
Nothing much, Justin. Nothing much. Just loving life and loving the Phillies right now. Such a change from a week ago, and I did not want to even admit they were a baseball team.
I mean, how soon before the I reached my conclusion on this today, because obviously we just watched the Phillies sweep the Mets in four games at home. In all four games, the Mets had the lead. A writer for the Athletic, a Mets beat writer, tweeted out today the pretty absurd percentile of victory that the Mets had in each of these games. So on Monday, their peak win probability was 68.2%. On Tuesday, it was 86.1%. On Wednesday, it was 95% chance that they would win the game. Thursday was 92.6, and they lost all four games, which is just, I mean, it's the kind of series that you watch baseball for. You want your team to have a series like this, especially after losing their last seven games. So Phillies are still in a deeper hole than I think they wanted to be. And you know, everything about this, and this was kind of my point, everything about this sweep just depends on what happens next, because we're early enough in the season that this could all, as fun as this was, this could all be easily forgotten in the next couple weeks leading up to the All-Star break. But this series was, to me, important in making it feel like who knows what happens next, but they made it feel like anything could. And I think that's pretty crucial to a very long baseball season. I don't know. Where are you at?
It was nice to see them recover from such an abysmal period of baseball, you know, find their groove. Like the Mets, I think a lot about the Mets, especially when we play them, but I think a lot about them. I have a couple of good friends who are Mets fans, lifelong Mets fans, and getting their perspective on Mets fandom is really helpful because they can seem sort of like a monolith. But like they, you know, I ran this idea by them. It was that the Mets are always embarrassing off the field. On the field, yes, sometimes, but off the field, they're always incompetent because the incompetence is baked in right at the top. Like, as annoying as this offseason was, think about what it must be like to be a Mets fan, because John Middleton is most likely in real life probably he's a rich dude. But like the Wilpons are actively bad at what they do, and it's just baked right into every hire they make. And watching the Phillies pound this sad franchise even further into the ground gave me such satisfaction. I can't even tell you. the Rays are ridiculous because they have a cheap owner. But the Mets, it's cheapness, but it's also stupidity and vindictiveness. Like, it's all built into the Wilpon brand of suckitude. And it seeps out. At this time of year, I feel like the warm weather makes it seep out from every pore, because I don't think we've seen a year where the Mets haven't done something ridiculously embarrassing at some point over the summer.
I realized after this sweep that none of the Mets players, None of them do I feel particularly wronged by. You know, there's no one who necessarily gets too under my skin. I feel like
there's no more John Neese or, you know, that's, I don't know why he's the first person to come to
finally
mind.
There's no Jose Reyes. You know, it was annoying when David Wright would beat the Phillies, but at least David Wright was like a great ball player whose career was destroyed
prime.
By injury. But like, man, it doesn't feel like agony to lose to this team more so than losing to any other team. I don't know. I'm just getting more stung.
It feels like history. Right. It feels more like history. Like, oh God, they're losing to the Mets again. Instead of, oh my God, the Mets beat the Phillies. Fuck everything.
Like when the drama happened with Scott Kingery and Jason Vargas, people were like, well, don't forget these teams have history. Beyond the general rivalry, what are they talking about? That's a real question. I didn't know what they meant.
The history is definitely just 07. That's really it.
Seriously?
Like, and I think there have been –
Scott Kingery was born in 2007?
I know. God, he was probably
14?
Like – 14? I don't know. I'm probably maybe younger than that. I guess I don't know how old he is now. Great job.
But seriously, I mean that's he's 25 years old. But like how they couldn't have meant that, you know? Like he was born in 1994, which sucks to say out loud with my mouth. But you know, Bryce Harper is only 2 years older than him. Reese Hoskins is only 2 years older than him. So you know, it's just why is this? I remember someone saying that during this series, and it was just like, what history do these guys have? Because this is not a very personal rivalry outside of the colors the teams are wearing and the logos on their hats. And, you know, it's more of a rivalry.
Well,
it's more of a rivalry to the fans than the players right now. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely true. And it's also just a super easy narrative. And it's an easy thing for people to say because they remember when these two teams were racing against each other, which happened like twice. And the rest of the time, it was like the rest of the history is the Phillies just getting the shit beaten out of them constantly by bad Mets teams. And like for that 1 year, a good Mets team. 2015, they were actually a decent Mets team. The rest of the time, they were not all that great. And the Phillies were awesome and beat the crap out of them. Like, you know, it's like it's little pockets of history that don't really add up to anything because the personnel changed like twice just there alone, and now it's changed like a third and fourth time. Like, it's all just an easy narrative for people to go to, you know, and it's the thing that you always say because, you know, Yankees and Red Sox, oh, there's bad blood. I don't think the benches have cleared for these two teams in ages. Like, there was that whole music playing thing during the playoffs last year. Were like they played New York and Boston something stupid and weak as opposed to like beating the crap out of each other on the field.
Like it's cool that the rivalry is addressed and put on national TV on occasion. And it's cool that it's there, but at the moment, you know, I wrote before this series started that a lot of times when these two play each other, nobody really wins because the teams are so bad most of the time. And they do get to like, you know, like pigs and shit roll around a bit and like that can be fun, but they're so rarely good at the same time that there's very few instances throughout history where there's actual ramifications for them beating each other. 07 and 08 were what most people address as like the peak of the Mets Phillies rivalry, but those days are long gone and these players just don't, you know, they don't know each other, you know, like in some cases we don't even really know some of the players. Like, can you imagine if somebody threw at Sean Rodriguez? I don't know how many Phillies fans would be getting worked up about that, frankly. But in any case, this was a big series for the Phillies. It was a great way. They won these four games in a row. If they had won four games in a row, but they hadn't all four been against the Mets, it still would have been great to see them win four games in a row, just because this is a team that needed to make some kind of statement to show they were alive. Like, they needed to show that they didn't just suck. And they were always going
to do literally exactly this. They needed, right. This is like the first time they've done exactly what they needed to do, which was win four games in a row, which is not something you should ever ask of your team, but they did it with just us silently wishing. Because what would you ever say? The Phillies need to sweep the Mets in four games. Four games is a lot of games.
a lot. It's tough enough to sweep a team in three games, let alone four. They had the advantage of being at home, but still, this is not a team that looked particularly adept to beat anybody. And I made the comparison.
They got swept by the Marlins.
Exactly. I made the comparison that, you know,
they're playing again.
That's like the difficulty was getting turned down. They lost to the Braves. They got swept by the Marlins. Then it is funny that the team they were finally, this is, you know, this is pre-beginner mode. This is training mode playing the Mets. And they were actually, this is where they were at home. And that's what I mean when I say it does depend on what happens next, because it's early enough in the season that that's still very much a factor. But if you're just focusing on the here and now, this had to happen. And I'm glad it happened the way it did. I'm glad it happened so dramatically. I'm glad guys got to play key roles. I'm glad Gene Segura got to be the one who hit the walk-off hit today. So we don't have to talk about any hustle narrative, because, you know, we all have the object permanence of a dog and we only can see and talk about what's in front of us anyway. I'm glad that Michael Franco had a big series, because that's random and fun and cool. You know, like, that's just fun. You can't, at this point, I'm not going to credit it as some kind of turnaround. I'm just going to say, hey, look, he hit some shitty pitching and helped the team win a couple of really big games. That's cool. That's
Franco
great.
Does this all the time. Mm-hmm. Every time. You know, he does this for more than like 10 games. We're like, is this it? I'm done. I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. This is who he is. He will have a handful of great games and be kind of abysmal the rest of the time. So, you know, let's all accept it.
We saw probably the best Aaron Nola start we'd seen in a long time today. You know, he went D at a no hitter through five innings today. Like that didn't get talked about a ton.
This was the start we needed to see.
This game started today, you know, like the perfect end to this series would be a game that focused less on offense and focused more on just Aaron Nola going deep and like having a great game, because, you know, again, he's going to have to put together some pretty solid starts before anyone says he's back, but man, boy, the fact that everything you wished would happen kind of came to fruition in this series. Like I tweeted that I had literally gasped when I checked the score, you know, 2 seconds later in the ninth inning today and saw that the Michael Franco had tied it up at 3-3. I did. That was not a joke. I literally went, like sitting at a desk and like, I couldn't believe it.
I know. I did too. I went, what? I actually did a voice raised cartoonish what?
Yeah, I mean that's all you could do, because again, this team coming off the stretch they had, this did not look like a team that was capable of something like this. So yeah, I don't know. Would your opinion have changed about where the Phillies will go from here if they had lost today and only won 3 out of 4 from the Mets? Are we having a different conversation right now?
Probably not. You know, like today's win was awesome and totally unexpected. But because we say it's totally unexpected, I think I probably would be like, you know, they really, we'd be saying, God, it would have been great if they could have won this game today. They had a chance in the ninth to come back. They were so close. They almost did it. I think that's what we'd be saying, because them winning 3 out of 4 games against the Mets after being swept by the Marlins, I don't care where the Phillies end up at the end of this season. Let us not forget ever that they got swept by the Marlins at close to midseason.
Can't be forgotten.
It can't be. That will either make us be, you know, be like, oh, well, of course they got swept by the Marlins. This is why this is happening. Or we can say, look at how they've come back after getting swept by one of the most pathetic teams in baseball.
Well, let's just break down some, let's just list some fun stats just from the short term. In the last week, the Phillies' best hitter is Cesar Hernandez. He's hitting .500 in his last 26 at bats with an 11.29 OPS. He has in that span, he's .500 in 26 at bats. He has 2 extra base hits.
Oh, come on.
The man has 11 singles in the past.
No!
11 singles and 2 walks.
That's one of those stats that you could be like, wow, his average went up 5 whole points. Right. All those singles.
Yeah, and despite all those hits, which is the most hits of any Philly in the last 7 days, he's only got 3 RBI. Incredible.
Oh my God. Wow. Michael, I don't think, let's take a minute to appreciate how Phillies that is.
That's perfect. You know, I mean, that's the kind of player he is. They put him up in the leadoff spot. He used to be the Phillies leadoff hitter. They were playing around with that again, I think, when they were shuffling guys around a little bit this year. But, you know, it's just the kind of guy, it's just how he's hitting the ball right now. And he was in a funk a little bit ago, so it's good to see him having any kind of success, frankly. Mikel Franco hasn't been getting a ton of playing time at all, but we know he had a pretty solid series. And in the last 7 days, he's gotten 17 at-bats, and he's 7 for 17. Again, his only extra base hits were 3 home runs. And wow. And those were big home runs again today. He tied it up. He's got a couple of walks, and he's got 7 RBI in the past week. Gene Segura, obviously more playing time. He's hitting .313 in the last week. He's got 10 hits. He's got 3 home runs. He's knocked in 10 runs. He's looked better and better at the plate. And even Bryce Harper is hitting a meaty little .280 with a .1019 OPS this week and 25 at bats. He's got a couple of home runs. He's got 6 walks. Reese Hoskins has 8 walks in the past week.
Wow. This team loves to walk. They just need to have someone who can hit behind those dudes. Mm-hmm. Come on.
I mean, imagine, you know, we saw Mets beat writer Andy Martino. He used to write for the Philly Inquirer. He tweeted today, just 13 more years of Bryce Harper. Oof. I think it was after Bryce Harper struck out. And Bryce Harper went on to hit a home run today that obviously contributed to the Phillies winning in extras. But
I would tell him to shut it.
I don't know,
and
man.
Feel shame, but he can't feel shame.
Like, you know, obviously,
Danny Martino.
You sign a guy for 13 years, you know he's going to suck for a decent chunk of that time. He's 26 years old. You can't tell me 37-year-old Bryce Harper is going to be the Bryce Harper who was signed to a 13-year deal. Of course he's not. But if we get a .280 hitter, like a pretty, you know, we haven't gotten that this year either. But I guess I'm just looking for, you surround Bryce Harper with a solid team. Bryce Harper's, when he gets hot, when he's able to produce even at like a .260, .270, .280 level, that's going to be enough. Frankly, you know, like it hasn't been enough of late. You know, he was at first, just his presence, I felt like, was enough to send ripple effects through the lineup. And when the team was hitting, you know, they looked really good just having him in the lineup, having guys in spots in the lineup that it seemed more appropriate that they should be in. But, you know, I look at that and it makes me laugh. Like, you know, You, what were people expecting? You know, were they expecting a .350 hitter all the time for 13 years? No. And I think somebody like Andy Martino knows that. He's got that little bit of a troll in him, the way that a Philly / New York columnist typically would. And that's just going to be said every time Bryce Harper strikes out. Someone's going to think that. I can't tell you how many times you see most overrated player in baseball. I feel like Bryce Harper probably is a little overrated. I don't know. What do you think?
I think so. You don't give a dude a contract that big and have him not be overrated. Manny Machado was overrated for the contract he got. Eric Hosmer is another one. Like even, Cole Hamels, that contract that he got at the time. Like you give a contract to a player, a big contract, and it's just, you have to expect that it's based on past performance. Like this is the whole problem with being overrated and underrated, because baseball fans have been trained to sort of think of value in a certain way. You know, you think of value as, you know, how much someone's paid. And a lot of times that is you're being paid for the everything that you did do, because no one has a crystal ball and everyone's going to crap on the players that don't live up to it. But like, what is a $30 million player a year? You know, what does that look like? Everyone assumes they know what it looks like, but most people are going to look at what Bryce Harper does and always say that it's never going to be worth that much. I don't know if they're right or wrong, but I also don't care because the contract is signed and it's not my money. And I like Bryce Harper a lot.
That's kind of it. That's all you can say, especially when he's underperforming like that. It's like, look, you know, I regret nothing about that. I really don't. Like, I'm not, there's no one else that I think they could have got. If anything, I'm happy they have Bryce Harper and not Manny Machado, frankly. I mean,
yeah, Manny, really I am.
Manny's looked great at different points this year, but that team has been flirting with .500 for most of the season, and Machado's got the the attitude that's everyone wants to blame Bryce Harper for having some kind of attitude. Machado's actually got that attitude. You know, I have no sympathy for umpires, as Trev and I discussed on the Patreon edition of the Dirty Inning Hit and Run this week. But, you know, you don't want a guy who's going to be a bad call away from throwing his equipment around and getting ejected all the time. I mean, you know, Bryce Harper's been ejected as a member of the Phillies, but it's, you know, history has shown Manny Machado's got a streak in him that's unpleasant to see at times, where he's, you know, the things he's done on the field are well documented. So if anything, I'm glad the Phillies got Bryce Harper, and I don't think there's anybody that I would rather have instead of him at the moment. So eventually we're going to see in the time we're going to have with Bryce Harper, eventually we're going to see a version of him who resembles what people think think the owners paid for. And that's going to be a lot of fun too. But for now, you know, let's concentrate on this team getting to where it's supposed to be. And hopefully Bryce Harper's a big part of that. But in the interim, you know, we have series like this where they are pulling themselves out of a tailspin. They sweep the Mets, which is always fun, in four games, which is even more fun. And Liz, before we go to our first break, Alec Bohm hit a home run in his first day with the Reading Fightin' Phils. Phillies prospect Alec Bohm and Mike Drago, who has been covering the Phillies Class A club for 30 years, reminds us that Mike Schmidt and Scott Rolen each homered their first day in Reading, and now Alec Bohm has joined them. Quite a tradition for Reading.
He never let us down again.
Quite a tradition for Reading Phillies third baseman. So,
I love
before it. We go to the break, Liz, do you think Alec Bohm will be more like Scott Rolen or Mike Schmidt?
We should be lucky. Even
if he is anything at all like either one of those people, we are already winners.
I was just going to say, I'm like, if he's like Scott Rolen, we should all thank our lucky stars.
Yeah, never thought we'd.
Scott Rolen was a great player.
Never thought we'd get a second crack at him. So
let's try it again, this time with less animosity.
Well, we asked our listeners this week to weigh in with some of their favorite Pat Burrell memories. And we're going to talk about Pat Burrell. But at first, we're going to take this first break. Well, Liz, as you know, and our listeners know, we like to travel back in time every week on this podcast and revisit the 2009 Phillies. And it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, we covered most of June in the past few episodes, and there was still some stuff going on with the 2009 Phillies in late June. We can hit on some of that here. We'll start with one of your favorite topics, Raul Ibanez's groin. You know, it was a little injured.
I forgot.
I'd like to weigh in on this and say that is incorrect. Yeah. Raul Ibanez's groin injury was turning out to just be a strain to everyone's relief, Liz. And hey, look, Brad Lidge is coming off the DL. Huzzah.
Yay. Again. Yeah. Nothing bad will happen to this team ever again.
He's back, folks. Ruben Amaro's search for starting pitching, you know, that went on. When that search reaches its resolution, we're going to have a whole episode dedicated to that huge moment in Phillies history.
Yes.
But
oh my God.
For now, the search goes on. The Phillies considered adding Brad Penny in a trade with the Red Sox that would have sent Jason Donald to Boston, which, oh man, not Jason Donald.
These names, my God.
Anybody but Donald. The Red Sox used this opportunity to sign John Smoltz, actually, so taking him out of availability. The Phillies were also said to be interested in the Rockies' Jason Marquis. Liz, any Jason Marquis thoughts?
Oh, God. He sucked.
Yeah, me too. On June 21st.
He sucked. I think the Phillies, I think the Phillies did super well. Every time they would face him, it was either... I think they hit the crap out of him.
Yeah, I remember him being like a solid pitcher, but, you know, us only seeing him when he pitched against the Phillies. I mean, Jason Marquis, his career was 15 years long, which is kind of insane.
Whoa.
Yeah, he missed 2014, but he pitched from when he was 21 years old. He appeared in 15 games in the year 2000 till 2015 when he was 36 with the Reds. He spent most of his career, he spent 4 years in Atlanta. He spent 3 years in St. Louis. I remember him as a Rockies pitcher. That's how I remember him. You know how many years he was with the Rockies? One.
No.
2009. He was with the Rockies in 2009. He had a 4.04 ERA, but he was an all-star. So, you know, he must have had a pretty good first half for the Phillies to be like, oh, maybe this will be the guy who saves our season. And, you know, looking at his stats in the first half, yeah, he had a 3.65 ERA through 18 starts. So, like, that's the kind of move I saw the Phillies making at that point. Like, somebody, they never really seemed to get, like, you know, in 93, the famous example is Randy Johnson. If the Phillies had signed and made a trade for Randy Johnson in 1993, like you know, it was rumored that they were about to pull off, it would have been the most, it would have broken my tiny 6-year-old brain. I would not have been able to handle the Phillies signing another player that I actually knew about and knew was excellent. And this was just that same thing. I was like, yeah, I expect them to get the guy with the 3.65 ERA, not the guy with the 15 strikeouts a game. You know, I don't, with the guy with like the sub 2 ERA, they never get the best guy. They get one of the surrounding guys. They get the Joe Blantons off the market. That was just how they operated. That's how Pat Gillick operated. But Ruben Amaro was a little different. He went about things a little differently. So the Phillies weren't going to, you know, they were interested in Jason Marquis, but apparently we know now they weren't going to settle for him. On June 21st, the Phillies.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. On June 21st, the Phillies finished up one of their worst homestands in franchise history. They went 1-8. Unlike the 2019 Phillies, when they lost a bunch of games, the 2009 Phillies were still in first place, despite people panicking. They were losing because of injuries. They were losing because Jimmy Rollins wasn't hitting. They had a terrible home record. They were 13-22 at Citizens Bank Park, but they were 23-9 on the road, the best in baseball, which is still absurdly good. 23-9 on the road. That's crazy. Ryan Howard got sinusitis in the middle of June somehow. Shane Victorino had to use a sock to cover his nose and mouth when he was walking around the clubhouse, which I think was a joke, but also I could see him being like, I seriously don't want to catch what you have. You know, Cole Hamels, around this time, he and his wife announced they were expecting a son, but they still had plans to adopt a little girl. So their family was about to grow a little bit. And by the end of the month, every Phillies infielder was in the top five for all-star voting at their position. Yes, even Pedro Feliz. He was.
Oh, God.
He was in.
Why?
Because the Philly, you know, it's like. In your head, it's like the Phillies fans are going down to a campaign, or not a campaign, like a voting booth
and like shoving ballots in there with like a big pool cue or something.
Right, like you're just like, oh well, I'm down here. I might as well vote for everybody. But like, you know, it's that, but on the internet. So I guess they just, you know, when you're voting for, you're not going to be like, I'm going to vote for everyone except Pedro because he's not one of like the best players. You know, you just throw Pedro a vote. Why not? And because of that, he was.
Things are real different.
Oh, yeah.
Things are real different now. They are. Like, wow.
They are much different now. That's very true. But because of that, Pedro Feliz was in fourth place in National League third base voting behind only David Wright, Chipper Jones, and Ryan Zimmerman. The NL East was dominating third base in this time. Yeah.
That literally makes no sense.
No. I wish I could remember.
Like, those are facts. I know, but like, I don't get it. I don't understand.
I wish I could remember who was fifth. I should have written that down. But Chase Utley was the only one in first place in the voting with over twice the votes of the second baseman behind him. And Ryan Howard and Jimmy Rollins were each in second. Raul Ibanez led all of the outfielders on the Phillies. Shane Victorino was in fifth in voting. Jason Wirth was in ninth. In Mets news, on the cover of the Inquirer, Bernie Madoff was being sentenced to 150 years.
That should have led to the Mets being contracted. But Bud Selig is a spineless little jelly worm. He was good friends with Fred Wilpon when he was still like the main guy in charge. And he would not come down hard on them. It was embarrassing. The Mets should the Wilpon should have lost control of the Mets. It's so embarrassing. Oh my God. That Bernie Madoff thing I don't know why people don't mention it every single day.
Liz, you just called Bud Selig a spineless little jelly worm, and that's just good writing. And I wanted to ask, is there a single baseball commissioner in your comings and goings of research and what have yous that that you think is good or respect in any way?
No. Like, I think Bart Giamatti is still pretty well respected, but I'll admit, I mean, I worked for a long time at Yale, and Bart Giamatti was one of the presidents of Yale. So I have a favorable impression of him in general, but there are bits of super bad commissioners, man. Kennesaw Mountain Landis was a violent
just
racist.
A raging monster. Yes.
Just a really like a actual monster human. He was, and he looked like he belonged on this, his face belonged on a mountain. Like, he just was old with this shock of white hair.
That might have explained, you know, the namesake, but yes, no,
I guess you're right. I didn't even think about that. Jesus.
But yeah, no, I agree. I feel like I could leaf through some archives and find some things that I was entertained by in regards to baseball commissioners, but I can't remember, you know, I don't know anyone, a lot of them who are, well loved. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of them who people are like, he was tough, I liked him, because people like to pretend they're tough, but like, yeah, no one springs to mind who wasn't a particular, you know, away from the idea of a spineless little jelly worm like you called Bud Selig, frankly. So
and it's because, let's all remember, the commissioner of baseball does not work for the right. fans. The commissioner of baseball works for the owners. They sign his paycheck. He does not give a crap what we think. And let's be serious, it will almost always be.
And he most certainly didn't give a crap about any sort of justice for the Wilpons or the Mets at this point. So that's what was going on with the Phils. We're obviously going to come back and talk about the All-Star Game in 2009. I think that's going to get its own episode too, if only because it's probably, I'll say this, it's probably the most Phillies we will ever see in an All-Star dugout in our lifetime.
Yeah. I do want to make sure, I know we're going to take a break. I do want to make sure that we talk about my first Phillies game ever is coming up.
Oh, wow. Up. All right. That's, yeah, we'll be
sure. Yep. That's
we'll be sure to jump on that as well. But this episode, Liz, this episode of Continued Success is being dedicated largely to one man. And I think, you know, since I've already said who that man is, there's no reason to hide it. Yes, Pat Burrell, a man who I don't remember us dedicating a single episode to Pat Burrell last year when we were talking about the 2008 team all season long. So I thought this was a good opportunity to talk about Pat Burrell because the Phillies in late June were in the middle of their interleague play stretch and they were playing the Tampa Bay Rays, the team that picked Pat Burrell up after he had left the Phillies after 2008. So because of that, obviously Pat Burrell's return to Philadelphia was treated as news. And, you know, Pat Burrell, he's a beloved figure, I think it's fair to say, in Philly's history, which is kind of hilarious because he really wasn't as good as anybody wanted him to be. You know, he was a top pick in the draft. And for the Phillies, you know, he spent 9 years in the Phillies organization or at the major league level with the Phillies. And he was a .257 hitter, had no .852 OPS. He had 251 home runs with the Phillies. And frankly, it's just not what they drafted him for. He finished fourth in rookie of the year voting in 2000 at 23 years old. And I think people wanted better from Pat Burrell. They didn't, you know, sometimes there were surges of success and sometimes there were very long slumps. I used to have the Sunday home game ticket package and there was one guy who would routinely, our seats were in left behind Pat Burrell, and a guy who would routinely yell $11 million Burrell every time he would come up short on a fly ball or strike out, just remind him how much money he was getting.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how it was. And, you know, when a guy's not performing at the level that the fans want, he's going to hear from him, especially in Philadelphia. So, yeah, that's Pat Burrell, but he's got a legacy of belovedness in Philadelphia, and I love it. And I think you love it, and everybody loves it. It's Pat Burrell. He's our guy. Even though the funny thing about Pat Burrell is that we all talk about him like we know him when so few of us do. But based on the persona Pat Burrell has let leak into the public through, you know, however, through quotes, through interviews, through social media, I think we all know somebody like Pat Burrell, and that makes him feel familiar. But what's interesting to me is that most of those people who we know who are like Pat Burrell are, you know, dicks. you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Because it's Pat Burrell and he won a World Series here and we don't actually know him, it's like, oh, it's great. It's funny that he's a dick. It's funny that he was like out in Old City every night. Like, and it is funny. I don't know if we'll ever see a Phillies player like that for a while. We're never going to see pictures of Scott Kingery like dancing on the bar at some shithouse bar in Old City.
I have to tell you though, he's one of those young Phillies who's unattached. Like, I'd like to see him paint the town red. Come on. I want to see Scott Kingery out there. He's signed. He's under contract. Let's see Scott Kingery, king of Philadelphia.
I mean, I'd love to see it too. I'm just saying that, like, yes, he's unattached and he must, you know, go out. But like at the same time, we now are in an age where guys are, you know, agents at least should be like having guys erase their social media histories. Like getting a picture of Scott Kingery doing something crazy at a bar just seems less and less likely. At the same, you know, even though this is an age where it seems more likely than ever, I don't, we haven't seen it in so long. I just remember very distinctly remembering seeing Pat Burrell in pictures at bars, and you just don't see that anymore, which is hilarious. So I don't know. Maybe he's just going to be the last tabloid darling of Phillies lore. Let's say that.
I think so. I mean, there aren't a lot of dudes who do stuff like that in baseball now, I don't think. You know, in general, it's, you know, I guess it's calmed down somewhat from what it used to be. I guess that's, you want a reason why baseball's not the news a whole lot. It's because everyone's gotten a little bit smarter.
Yeah, exactly. And so before we launch into, we asked our listeners for their favorite Pat Burrell memories, whether they were on the field, whether they were in person. And, you know, we got a wide variety of stuff. We got some stuff that happened on the field. We got some stuff that happened off the field. We got some stuff that was like laughably, you know, gross, laughably hilarious. I mean, it's just a lot of stuff that everybody seemed to tell you with this sort of like head shakingly, like, that's our Pat, like, kind of, you know, no matter what they were saying, it was just kind of like, yeah, that was Pat. So Liz, before we get into everybody else's memories, what is your favorite Pat Burrell memory? Not counting the double in the World Series.
My favorite Pat Burrell memory, I think, whenever someone asks me to think about Pat Burrell, I always think about him at the parade. That's always the first thing I go to, because it's just Pat Burrell wild and free. You know, he wasn't what everybody wanted, but he won a World Series. You know, he had a pivotal moment. He contributed to it in a lot of ways. And I don't know, it's just pure Pat. It's what I love most about him, you know, distilled into euphoria.
I gotta say that, like, it sucks that this is as late in the game as it is, but the thing that I remember most about Pat Burrell is that video of him on the slip and slide that came out on Chase Utley's Instagram, where he's got a drink in his hand and he's coming down the slide.
No, how did I not remember that? Jeez.
I mean, it's kind of what everybody pictures when they think of Pat Burrell. And like Marshall Harris interviewed him on NBC Sports Philly a couple of years ago and just talked about like, what was going through your head when you were doing that? And he was like, you know, he just gave some like jokey answers. He was a good sport about it, but it was just like, I don't know. That's just like, that's Pat Burrell. He's like, it's going down a slip and slide with a drink in his hand. That's exactly what you think when you think of Pat Burrell. But we got plenty of stories to parse through here and then, talk about, you know, what he did in late June against the Phillies. And we'll get to all that right after this break. Well, Liz, we got a lot of Pat Burrell memories, about as much as you'd expect from a bunch of Phillies fans and people who lived in Philadelphia and the various neighbors where Pat Burrell would go during his Phillies years. Our own Allie Foster told us that at one point she let a door slam in Pat Burrell's face in Texas. I didn't really get any context on this, if it was on purpose or not. Easily believable in either case. We had a guy at 8-Trek told us when he refused to give 12-year-old me an autograph at the 1999 MLB Futures game because I was from Reading, where he was playing. Which, you know, I'm not sure I totally get why he wouldn't do that because he was from Reading, but that's Pat just choosing not to give that autograph. But alternatively, we had a guy who said that he saw Pat when he was still at Miami, and he was he came up to him and gave him an autograph. And this is a story from a guy named at the Mic Drop 5. I met him when in Baltimore, and I was 10. I wore a Miami jersey. He came over, took a photo with me, and talked for a bit. A few weeks later, he went to Philly. I wore the same jersey. He saw me, pointed at me, and came over to sign, telling people he had to sign for his boy first. Still have the photo signed and three hats in my basement with all my Phillies memorabilia. Pat was my all-time favorite. He was given a tough time by fans during his struggles, but never complained. Worked hard, earned that seat at the front of the parade. That was one of my favorite stories we got, because that's not
agreed. That was so great.
Yeah, that's not the Pat we think of immediately, but definitely it was the that's.
It feels like Pat. It feels like, hey, there's a kid I signed for. He was kind of cool.
Yeah, he's got his Miami jersey on. Like, you know, that's
I got to sign for him first.
Right, that's cool.
He's back.
Mm-hmm. So obviously we're going to get into the territory of Pat Burrell and everybody's girlfriends, because that's just part of it. One guy at Hive's husband told us, I was at a game with a friend of mine once, and he asked, do you think Pat Burrell will ever settle down, in a very melancholy way? Like, he was really worried that Pat wouldn't meet the right person and spend the rest of his life alone, which just cracks me up thinking that this is someone's concern.
Pat Burrell's not alone, guys.
Poor Pat. One guy, Brandon Gassoni, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, says that Pat Burrell, acknowledging my dirty laundry jersey and then proceeding to convince a girl I was with that he could get only her into the Pen and Pencil Club. Extreme highs and lows with Pat the Bat.
Just a bit.
I love that. Another guy at The Wrong Alex says, I'm sure everyone has a Pat Burrell stole my girl story, but I remember that last season at the Vet when he really struggled. The guy never stopped putting in effort, and the fans had his back in a way that they often don't for struggling players in Philly. So I wanted to talk about this because I think that's not wrong, but I also think that Pat got plenty of shit for not being a superstar, based on where the Phillies drafted him, based on what was expected of him. But the thing was, and this is what I'm curious to see if you agree, the thing was, people were a lot more patient with Pat because the pressure was off him once Chase, Jimmy, and Ryan showed up. I mean, do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they showed up and they met their expectations. It sort of made everybody not really care and pay attention about, you know, to what he was doing. He could just sort of do the best he could, and it was going to be fine because Chase and Ryan and Jimmy were there.
Exactly. Yeah. And he didn't have to carry the team. He didn't have to put up the best numbers. Obviously that's what people wanted to see. And I mean, he was here 9 years. I mean, when I saw that number, I was like, oh my God, in my head, it's not that long, but he was here from when he was 23 till he was 31. I mean, that's a huge amount of time. And he was basically, you know, he had a couple of years where he hit 280 or so, but he was basically like a 250, 260 guy. Never had an OPS in the four digit range, and only twice was it in the 900s. So he got some MVP votes in 2005 and some MVP votes in 2002. And like I said, he finished fourth in Rookie of the Year voting in the year 2000, behind Rafael Furcal, Rick Ankiel, and Jay Payton.
Those are some names. Those are some dudes.
I don't remember Jay Payton at all. I don't
Ooh.
Wow. He played 12 years, but no, I don't remember Jay Payton at all.
It dings a vague bell in the back of way back in my mind. I'm like, that is a name that sounds like I've heard in connection to baseball, I guess.
He was on the Mets, so, you know. Oh, there you go. But yeah, so there's also someone submitted a picture of Pat Burrow colliding with, I guess, future Philly Brian Schneider in this picture when Schneider was on the Expos. And they said when he single-handedly destroyed the Expos franchise. And then also the walk-off two-run homer versus the Giants in the 10th inning on May 2nd, 2008, which, yes, was excellent. Pat hit a couple of home runs that people brought up. We're going to get to the main ones at the end of this, at the end of this segment. Paul Hutchison said, I was at Citizens Bank Park sitting near the left field line. Pat absolutely crushes a home run and the next inning trots out to left field. Guy in front of me goes, hey, Pat, fastball? Burrow hears him, turns, and just shrugs. You know, I honestly remember a time when I think I've brought this up before, but there was a time when I think the Phillies were playing the Cubs. And I was in those same seats. So, you know, Pat was the guy you were yelling at, whether you were trying to yell at him or not. And someone on the Cubs hit a home run that was foul or just looked very, very foul. And the umpire was Adrian Johnson. I remember because I looked him up because I never wanted to forget it. Because he just called this home run fair when it was foul. Everyone in the section thought it was foul. We were all very riled up. The fanatic who never came to that section was, I think, dispatched to, you know, calm everyone down or distract everyone because we were getting so mad. And
phenomenal.
I remember just being, you know, this was, again, the point of my life where I could afford emotionally to be the most upset about this. And I'm just like scrambling around the section and I find myself like, you know, I can't remember if they were like reviewing it or just, you know, they were talking to the umpires or what. And Pat was just hanging out in left field. And I did the same thing. I ran down and he was like, Pat, I was like, Pat, was it fair? Or just, you know, some question like that. And he did the same thing. He turned around and just like shrugged at me. Like, what do you want from me? Like, I'm just, there's nothing I'm going to be able to do. Like, except I guess agree with you, but like, what is, you know, come on, just, you don't interact with me. Like, let's not do this.
Just leave me alone, kid. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And he was totally right. At Vincent Ruff says, walking into a bar with a big gulp cup. He's talking about Pat Burrell. Goes behind the bar and fills up the big gulp. Sits down at the bar as if nothing crazy just happened. Which is, that's an awesome move. If they're just letting people do that, then,
I mean, what are you going to do? Stop Pat Burrell? I mean, plus, I'm going to guess you might have had an understanding with this bar.
Oh, absolutely.
If he's walking in with a big gulp and just walking behind the bar, like you can imagine him like crawling out of bed at like noon when he's got a 7 p.m. game or on like an off day, walking down in his bathrobe and slippers like he's in like a movie or a sitcom, just walking down in his slippers like, good morning, everybody, pouring himself a beer.
Look, he clearly had a system in place, but I don't know.
That's a great way to put it.
I don't know how reputationally you drink like Pat Burrell drank and still stay in baseball shape. I don't know how you balance that, because if you're drinking big gulps full of beer to the point where you have an understanding with a local bar that you could just come in and do that, and also you're still and then also still hit 250 as a Major League Baseball player. I mean, that's pretty good. Even if you're just like, you know what, I'm making this agreement now that I could have been a 300 hitter for my career. I'm deciding not to do that and using some of my talent to just drink and party and, you know, sacrifice that talent to be able to do this kind of stuff. You know, hey, salute, man. Like that was your choice and you made it. That's cool. Same guy says another bar story. Walks over to a waitress who had a bunch of bottles of beer on a tray, picks the tray up and takes it to his table. Apparently it was another table's drinks. They ask him who he thinks he is. His answer, Pat fucking Burrell, which again, hilarious, but also Pat Burrell wasn't, as we said, he wasn't Chase, Jimmy or Ryan, who would never do anything like that. So like the fact that he was like, hey, you know who I am? I'm Pat fucking Burrell. It's like, hey, yeah, you know who I am? I'm the guy who like hit sixth or seventh in the Phillies lineup and isn't an all-star. You know, it's not like he's like a legend of the game who can walk in and get whatever. He's like, I am an average MLB player. Get out of my face. Like, okay, I don't know if that necessarily warrants stealing a table's drinks, but at the same time, who's going to mess with him? I love the confidence, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, agree. if you could play baseball at that level and still get paid and do all that, like, would you sacrifice a little bit? I would.
Yeah.
Like, you could be in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, Pat Burrell made $70 million over the course of his career. He's fine. He's happy. If you could make $70 million and still drink and maybe sacrifice a little bit, be able to walk up and say, I'm Pat fucking Burrell, take a tray of drinks and become a legend. Yes. 1,000 times. Yes. Every day, twice on Sunday, I make that choice. I could be a 300 hitter, maybe make the Hall of Fame, but also you only live once. And that sounds like it might be miserable. I don't want to eat yogurt, not drink. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And I feel like that's a choice he made along the way. And hey, respect. Somebody asked this, and I didn't recall this. Maybe you do. Somebody asked, didn't one of the post-game TV guys have a name for it when Pat Burrell would strike out and talk to himself on the way back to the dugout? Or was it for when he threw his butt out on an inside strike? I don't recall this.
I know. I mean, like, I recall him sticking his butt out on an inside strike. Like, I could remember doing that. That's like a classic. I mean, also, he had a good butt to stick out. Like, it made it look like he was going real far.
Yeah, that's
true. He wasn't really moving all that much, but, you know, he had a good butt.
Guy had a good butt. Let's just call it that. And Pat Wood.
We are here at Continued Success and the Hidden Season Podcast Network are supportive of good baseball butts.
Yes. And Pat Burrell had one of the better ones from that era. Amen. If not the best. Yeah. I mean, that was a focus of his, I feel like.
His chest and arms were also pretty great, as we all remember from that calendar.
Oh, God, yes, that calendar. That was pornographic.
Let's be serious. It made more than a few men in the Delaware Valley feel some feelings. They felt a tingle. They couldn't deny it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was Pat fucking Burrell. Like, what else is there to say? Like, that's what he's there for, to make you tingle. That's why you take him number one, you know? Pat Wood says during his season from hell, fans chanting waivers at him after a ball didn't come out of the corner quick enough. That season was one of the most brutal on a player who ended up staying. I can't think of anyone else who endured like he did. And, you know, that was more than the first person to talk about how much, like, Pat Burrell just endured from the fans. Because, again, he wasn't the best hitter on the team. Any year, he was not the best hitter on the team. I remember my grandparents taking me down to spring training one of the early years, probably, you know, around 99, 2000, when Pat Burrell was with the team. And I remember getting his autograph. I got a lot of bad autographs that year. Got a lot of Alex Arias's, Scott Schrenk's, you know, a lot of those types. Just you're sticking the ball out and, you know, to a player who's going by and he grabs it and signs it. But I remember Pat Burrell signed it. And I remember my grandfather being like, that's who I wanted you to get his signature because he's, you know, he's the next guy. I wanted to be sure you got him. I was like, all right, cool. And I think that, yeah, you know, expectations were high and he had a couple of really brutal years. But I mean, we have no idea what he actually went through, but it does. It just seems in your head. It's just like Pat Burrell just kind of shrugged it off. You know, he didn't seem to eat him alive by any stretch of the imagination. And you know what? He ended his career with two World Series rings. So, and like you said, tens of millions of dollars. So I think he did okay. And lastly, we have a guy named Captain Philadelphia who said, I'm pretty sure Pat Burrell is the father to at least one of my children. Unfortunately, there are many other men in the Delaware Valley that can relate. I would not be unique. And I don't think you can call yourself Captain Philadelphia without also suspecting that one of your children is fathered by Pat Burrell, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree.
Well, of course we had mentions of, this was the most repeated mention. So we had mentions of the two home runs in 2007, Pat Burrell hit off Billy Wagner. Massively satisfying dongs, much like Pat Burrell's, given the context, which you know, let's go through them here. This was the Associated Press in 2006 on a story about Billy Wagner's return to Philadelphia as a member of the Mets following this story was in May 2006. Billy Wagner began to feel unpopular in the Phillies clubhouse last July after he said the Phillies ain't got a chance of making the playoffs and criticized his teammates for not having enough intensity, saying they quit when they got behind. Now, I remember this at the time, Liz. Like, this was Billy Wagner, you know, fuck you, Billy Wagner. The Phillies didn't like this, obviously. But I liked two points here. I loved that the Phillies didn't love it and that they, like, came after him about it. But I also, looking back, I'm just like,
hello.
I wonder what it would have been like if somebody like Billy Wagner had been on the Phillies last year.
Hello.
When it looked like
they
kind of didn't want to play baseball anymore. And somebody had been there to call them out instead of having, you know, it was Gabe Kapler's philosophy back then was nobody gets called out. But I don't know. Would a Billy Wagner have helped that situation?
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah, absolutely not.
That team was lost. That team was lost. There was nothing. Like, you know, we criticized Gabe Kapler because it's all we could do. You know, we wanted him to say something and act like we wanted him to act like he understood where we were coming from and related and was a human being with emotions, which we know he is. But hearing him spout that stuff was so difficult. You know, there isn't anything that could have helped that team. And I think he knew that. And, you know, shitting on people wasn't really going to help. And it wasn't. We were all just angry and sad.
Yeah.
Oh, God, were we sad.
And I asked that question just to see what your answer would be. But frankly, there's just no good reason for Billy Wagner to be anywhere or a Billy Wagner type to be anywhere near the Phillies.
No.
Yeah. So,
or anywhere. Let's just say that.
This is, again, from the AP story. That led to a team meeting where Wagner said he felt like it was 24 against 1. Wagner said Tuesday he was trying to defend his comments about the team in the meeting and hoped a teammate would support him. I didn't hear them speak up in the meeting and say anything to back me up, Wagner said. They were the ones shaking their heads and nodding with some of the things going on. So, but like, what do you expect? Like, I guess in some clubhouses, somebody would have been like, okay, look, lay off Billy. Like, let's just all think about it. But, you know, they were pissed off. He was like, we don't have a chance of making the playoffs and this team quits all the time. If they were a team that really quit all the time, they wouldn't have had a meeting to say like, hey man, fuck you. No, we don't. Some teams that quit would have been like, yeah, you know, who gives a shit? We don't need to address this because, you know, it is how we are. But, you know, that team wasn't. I mean, you know, 2006 was part of the era of Phillies teams that fell just short and that was frustrating. So like, I get that, but like, yeah, they were young players, a lot of young players who were developing on that team, and we saw what they did later. But yeah, you know, at this point, after this conversation, the Phillies reportedly suggested doing a media boycott. And according to this story I'm quoting, Wagner was the only one who consistently made himself available afterwards. You know, there was always one or two guys, but, you know, the team really didn't go out of their way to make themselves available to the press. So we can presume that made him dear in the hearts of you know, the poor reporters looking for inane quotations. Though, of course, if there was one guy who didn't represent the Phillies of this era, it's Billy Wagner, who left because the team wouldn't offer him a no-trade clause, among other things. He complained about being heckled in the bullpen by Phillies fans and apparently once paid a guy $20 to shut up and go away, which just means, I think, he was just a little more sensitive about it than players typically are. But we're talking about Billy Wagner so much because after all this and the players' meeting, Pat Burrell famously called him a rat, which is awesome. And he was.
Yeah.
And he was. Oh. He was. Billy Wagner was a rat. And Pat Burrell was right. Burrell wasn't perfect, but at least he was part of the team. Wagner may have had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but he was like Papelbon in that way. He just never really felt like he was a Philly. Burrell was. And the AP story says Wagner targeted Burrell with a subtle little passive shot in the press, too. We needed to quit worrying about little piddly things and play the game and play hard and quit worrying about our hair or what's going on after the game, Wagner said. Which is probably not even invalid criticism, to be honest. But, you know, Burrell hit .235 against Wagner in his career. But those two home runs in 2007 were all he needed for people to remember. Wagner would go on, of course, to play for the Mets and win zero World Series titles. Pat Burrell won one with the Phillies in 2008 and again with the Giants in 2010. But in 2009, he was with the Rays. And around this time in 2009, he absolutely rocked his old team, coming back as a former teammate who'd left in after 2008. And in some ways, you know, he came back kind of like Wagner, his old nemesis. The Inquirer tried to scare him, tried to poke him into making some kind of like inflammatory anti-Phillies remark. But they wrote on June 25th, 2009, after Pat Burrell had hit a home run and knocked in three runs as a member of the Rays facing the Phillies, they talked about how his popularity had fluctuated over his 9 years with the organization. But the one thing that was true was that he was a Philly, and that was his identity. That's what they wrote. He'd had a neck injury and been recovering and would never really be the same player, or whatever you think is the same player again, but he'd always be Pat Burrell. And you mentioned this as well, so I'm glad we're going to close on this. All it took was a shot of him in a gimp suit or a video on Chase Utley's Instagram account many years later, doing a slip and slide with a drink in his hand, to remember that he'd always been Pat Burrell. Burrell may not have been exactly what anyone wanted him to be, but he was always exactly who he wanted to be. And honestly, that's something a lot of people don't get to say. And honestly, it's also the kind of cheesy sentiment that would probably get Pat Burrell to think that I suck or kick my ass, which he probably would.
Well, you know, you like to hope that maybe Pat Burrell has softened a little bit in his old age, old age, quote unquote, of course. But, you know, you like to think that maybe some time away has, you know, increased the Pat Burrell, you know, the essence of Pat Burrell, and gotten rid of all that ridiculous bravado bullshit. Because, I don't know, you hope that that's, you know, the mature post-baseball Pat Burrell when he's not constantly bathed in testosterone all the time.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's just got a very interesting legacy. A guy who, like, he's a good example of what your treatment in Philadelphia is like. I think fans in Philadelphia, they're more comfortable going after a guy who came up through the farm system, who's got certain expectations attached to him. I don't know. It's maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm just adding filters to things that don't exist. But, like, you know, there's the kind of going after a guy like Bryce Harper, who's making a ton of money, who you have certain expectations for. Then there's guys who are high draft picks, who put up good numbers, who you're waiting to see good things from. And I don't know, you yell at them because you want them to do well, not because you hate them. And, you know, Pat Burrell weathered a lot of that, and he never really became a superstar, but people talk about him like he's, you know, one of their favorite players. It's and he came up in an era where there are a lot of guys who people consider their favorite players. Like, people are going to talk about Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, and Ryan Howard a lot more than they're going to talk about Pat Burrell. But I don't think
Pat Burrell will always be talked about with love and affection.
I don't think you're going to find more entertaining stories about those other three guys.
That's why he's beloved, because no, he wasn't what everybody wanted, but as a character, as a story, as a legend, because Philadelphia hungers for that stuff. You know, a solid, you know, they would love Mike Trout and Mike Trout would love being here probably, but it's because he's from here and he sort of grew up in this and he knows what to do to make everybody happy. But beyond that, he would be kind of boring, I think, because he's just not a guy that inspires a lot of stories. He's going to go out and he's going to do great things. But Pat Burrell's a legend.
He's a legend. And
when you have those stories written about, when you have people with memories from, I think he fathered one of my kids, to he made me the happiest young boy in the world. You know, that's a guy who did it right. That's a guy who Philadelphia
exactly.
loves.
Exactly. I think that's a great point to end on. He will always be a guy Philadelphia loves. That's absolutely true. Well, folks, thank you for listening to this episode of Continued Success. We'll be back next week talking about whatever has happened with the current Phillies, as well as journeying back in time and talking about what was going on with the 2009 Phillies at the start of July, coming up on that fun all-star episode, as well as at the end of July, the Cliff Lee trade episode, which is going to be a doozy. So be sure to listen, tell your friends and family and strangers on the street to subscribe, download, and rate our podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family. We've got a new Dirty Inning up this week from 1970. That was a lot of fun. Deals with Jim Bunning at the end of his career, Nolan Ryan at the beginning of his career, and a brutal Phillies loss that occurred when the two faced each other. John Stolness is always doing new hidden season episodes. We, of course, do the round table with all three of us on Sunday nights, and he does a great episode in the middle of the week. This week, he talked to an astrophysicist about the state of baseballs in Major League Baseball. It's a very interesting conversation. So we are always bringing you fresh new Phillies content there, as well as on our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/hiddenseason. And for $5, you get all kinds of extra content. We've got some new Dirty Inning content up there about umpires and our takes on umpires, and a case in which umpires faced actual workplace violence way back in the 50s. So lots of good Phillies content out there that at most would only cost you $5. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.